nothing is more expensive than bad information. Know the source. OneRadioNetwork.com.
Well, fun seekers, hi there. This is Patrick Timpone. Very pleasant good afternoon to you. Hope you enjoyed a few of the archive shows we did with Andrew Goss, Fred Dashefsky, who's generally here the first Wednesday of the month. He was not able to do a show, so we thought we'd give you a little money, some money vibes and energy on Wednesday. And Fred's going to be here next Wednesday, and we'll pick up. But we played some shows of the week that Lehman died in 2008. Really some fun shows and quite an interesting retrospective with Andrew Goss. Tomorrow we're going to be here. No, actually, we're going to take the day after tomorrow. We'll often take Thursday off and work on our screenplay. And then on Friday, we'll be back. And goodness knows what we'll be up to. But I'm sure we'll get into some trouble and probably get censored from some few more places if we're doing our job. Well, it's a pleasure to be here with you. If you care to join the show, you can try 888-663-6386. Email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. One of the listeners sent me a video of this lady, our guest. Her name is Tracy Northern, and she is in Ireland, where it's about 6 o'clock her time. And she's an animal rights activist and began looking at the work of Stefan Lonkin, who wrote about the AIDS virus that he believed never did really exist. You know, he did that 30 years ago, back in the 40, however long that is, 40 years ago, I guess. Lonkin's been all over it. And she's quite a good researcher. And so we're going to get her perspective, because I think that this is a big deal if we can really understand, as we become to believe, Miss Tracy. Good evening to you in Ireland. Tracy, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Thanks for coming on the show. Hello there. Thanks for coming on the show. You live in a beautiful country. I was there one time for a few days, and my goodness, you could talk me into staying there. You could talk me. It's really beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah, you're welcome to come and stay in my yurt.
Really?
When I get it up. Well, yes, I've got a yurt.
You have a what, dear?
It's a yurt.
A yurt.
Mongolian.
What is a yurt? Dare I ask what a yurt is?
It's a Mongolian tent.
It's a Mongolian tent. Well, good.
For them, it's their house.
I see.
It's a pretty substantial tent, like a little mini house.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm going to get one put up in my garden.
Oh.
Guests to come and stay in.
So how does one go from an animal rights activist, which you have been for a long time, into the idea of a virus? What kind of moved you into that direction?
Well, it's quite a long story, because my biggest thing was vivisection.
Vivisection.
Experiments on animals in labs.
Yeah.
And I'd be going to rallies and talks and stuff, and that people would get up and speak.
Mm-hmm.
But all they ever talked about was testing things like makeup and washing up liquids. When it came to research, any kind of medical research, they backed off. They didn't want to go there. They didn't want to touch it.
Oh.
Because I don't know... They were basically miseducated,
mm-hmm.
and they seemed to think that it was needed, that we needed to use animals to find out cures for diseases. So the way I was thinking was, if I can go down that route and do a bit of research into why they use animals, how it's supposed to help find cures for
mm-hmm.
diseases.
Mm-hmm.
Then I can fight it in a different way.
Yes.
So that's how I started my research initially. Was, I think I read Slaughter of the Innocents by Hans Reusch. He's a German doctor. and he had a specific chapter on vaccines. And I found it really interesting because what he was saying was basically that vaccines didn't work. And the animal experiments were basically just giving them excuses to keep doing the vaccines. Basically, they were using the tests to show that things were safe.
That things were what, dear? That things were safe?
Safe, yes.
Okay.
That drugs, using them to test if drugs were safe or not. Basically, they can choose any animal to prove that anything's safe. Like, they'll just go through different animals and different doses and find one that it works in, and then they can say it's safe.
I see.
For humans, even though they're testing on animals which are completely different to humans.
Yeah.
So I was looking into it more and more, and I just got deeper and deeper into a rabbit hole, really, basically. And it ended up here eventually.
Yeah.
But I spent years in anti-vaccine movement because I had kids. I started having kids at the beginning of my research.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to get them vaccinated, A, because of the animal testing, but then B, because I was finding out how bad they were as well, and that they didn't work. So
yes, when did you come to the conclusion in your own heart that there is no virus, any of these viruses, not only COVID, but we can talk about, you know, AIDS and polio and everything. When did it really a light bulb come off for you? When was that? How'd that happen?
It was about 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was Lanka again. He put up a reward for anyone to give him proof that they'd found the measles virus. And he wanted the proof that it existed, and he wanted its dimensions.
Yes.
We have to measure the size of it, and a photo as well of a isolated measles virus.
Yes.
And he put up a reward of, he started off with 10,000 euros, and some little oik scientist turned up with 6 papers, and basically the... I don't think the judge understood the papers because, you know, science speak, it's all a bit gobbledygook to most people. So he lost the original case.
Yes.
And the judge said that he should pay up. But he refused, and he wanted to go to appeal so that he could argue his case and prove that the papers were bullshit, basically. So that was in 2016. And then in 2017, the appeal case happened. It was all over the news, the original case, because they said he lost.
Right.
And the news, all the scientists were like, yay, we got him. But when it went to appeal, it was like crickets. Nobody mentioned the appeal in any of the papers because he basically pulled the papers apart, showed that there was no proof of any virus in any of them, and he also did some control experiments. He paid for them himself in a private lab to do the experiments that should have been done in the papers that they were giving into the court as proof, but they hadn't. So he did these control experiments, which actually proved that the whole experiments were bogus, and that they didn't prove it.
And he won the appeal.
Well, he did, yeah. And it went into case law that particular paper, the Enders paper, which was the measles virus.
Yes, ma'am.
Supposedly yes, the ma'am. Original measles virus isolation paper. It's case law now that they can't use that paper as proof that there is a measles virus.
Yes.
It's been
interesting. We're talking with Tracy Northern. Tracy, can you do me a favor? You see that settings that you found there on your lower right, the settings button?
Yeah.
Click on that, if you would, and make sure that the box called echo cancellation is checked. Is it checked?
Yep. Yes.
Okay. I don't know why I'm getting a little bit of feedback. What else is checked in that box?
Auto gain.
Yeah, why don't you take off the auto gain? We don't need that. And then echo cancellation. And then hit reconnect. Reconnect.
You want me to untick echo cancellation?
No, I want you to leave that on. But for some reason, I'm getting a little bit of feedback. I can hear myself come back. She's hitting reconnect. I don't have the auto.
I've done it.
Yeah, you've done it. Good job. Okay, well, I think that might help, yeah. I was hearing my voice come back a little bit. So just to recap, Ms. Northern is talking about Stefan Lanken, and you can see his work. He's all over the place now, and we've been trying to get him on the air with Cowan and Kaufman, and he's pretty busy, but he's been doing some interesting experiments as well, doing some control experiments on this whole COVID thing that I think he's pretty deep into. But on the measles, it's so fascinating. So we believe in, well, let me also say that Enders, that Tracy is talking about, isn't it true, Tracy, that Enders is the paper that I think was published in the 50s that pretty much this whole germ theory is built on, right? But it's just not proper science, the Enders paper, correct?
It's not built on that paper. The system that they use now to isolate viruses is that system that he used for that paper.
Okay.
It's the system where they put supposedly the virus in with cells, but they also add like antibiotics and they starve the cells and they poison them.
Monkey kidneys or whatever. Right.
Yeah. This is the system that he started and that they've used ever since.
I see.
To supposedly grow and isolate viruses.
I see. So explain to us why this idea that it has to be isolated, like Cowan and Lanka and others are talking about and you are. Why does it have to be isolated? Couldn't there be a virus there with other stuff sticking on it?
Well, no, because in science, if they want to be scientific and they want to prove that a virus causes a specific disease, which is the germ theory, it has to be a specific germ or virus that causes a specific disease. So if you've got non-specific things in the mix, then anything else could be causing the disease and not the virus germ that you're trying to prove causes it. So, yeah, it is very important.
So when you put it in a petri dish and you do antibiotics or you starve it or use monkey kidneys or all the stuff they do, even Judy Mikovits, who still claims she isolated the HIV virus, and she didn't, really, because she doesn't have an isolated virus microscope, does she? She doesn't have it.
No. Did you see that interview where Andy Kaufman laid into her about
it? I did.
And
he kept saying, Judy, I mean, you just don't have it, and you keep saying you do, and she just wouldn't go there, would she?
I made a meme about her because she used to really get on my nerves, the way she talked and all the crap she was coming out with. I made a meme that I post around about her, because basically she's a patsy for the vaccine industry, I think.
Do you think so? Wow.
She's actually said herself that she is trying to develop immune therapy, which is vaccines. She's in the
You think she's in on the game? And
she's just pissed. Yeah, she's not part of the game.
Yeah, she's been coming up some things on this whole shedding idea that we haven't even talked about, because I just don't trust her because of what you've just said. I don't trust what she's saying, so we can't go there.
No.
So explain to the moms listening, see, moms, I used your term, moms, listening, measles and mumps, what you believe and what the science shows that they really are, that it's not something that you catch. Because I'm sure some new moms will watch this and say, come on, I got to give my kids a measles vaccine. Talk to them.
Well, as I like to say, I'm not a doctor. I don't diagnose, and I'm not really looking into that side of things. But and there isn't really any fixed, nobody really knows, basically, because all the funding's gone towards germ theory and viruses. So nobody's been looking at the other possibilities that it could be. And I can't concentrate by looking at my own face. Can you put your face back? It's really putting me off.
Okay, sure. Don't look at your face. I understand.
I look like I'm talking to myself. Yeah, I can look at you.
It's easier to look at me. Okay, I'll do that. Fine.
So there's different schools of thought now in the alternative field.
Mm-hmm.
And the main alternative is terrain theory, which is what Echamp was putting forward when they were looking at germ theory, him and Pasteur. Pasteur went one route and Bish went down the other. He went down the terrain route, which is basically the terrain is your body, is where your germs live. The soil, mm-hmm. if you like,
mm-hmm.
and if the soil is poisoned or infertile, just not very good place to grow, then the germs aren't happy. And there's also the pleomorphism thing, which was also Bichamp, where germs are not fixed in one state. Like in germ theory, they talk about different types of germs, like the TB germ mm-hmm. that causes TB. There's a diphtheria germ that causes diphtheria. But actually, they're all the same thing. It's one kind of microorganism that changes shape according to the terrain. So if your terrain's nice and balanced, mm-hmm. it's the right alkalinity, acidity, whatever,
mm-hmm.
you'll have the basic normal germs that look like, I don't know what happy germs look like.
Happy germs. They're happy germs.
The ones that are doing the job.
They're getting along, eating what they need to eat. Or
cleaning up the dead cells, the debris, mm-hmm. doing their job. Right. If the terrain gets in some way dirty, like you're putting too much crap in your body, you're poisoning yourself, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And the germs are having a hard time doing the job. Maybe they're overwhelmed, or the terrain is actually making them feel sick.
Mm-hmm.
They have to change to a stronger form. A form that can work in those conditions.
Okay.
I like to say it's a bit like when you go to work and you have to put on a hazmat suit if you're going to do some dirty work.
Yeah.
Or you put your marigolds on to do some dirty work.
Mm-hmm.
This is the germ putting on the hazmat suit. to protect themselves, basically, mm-hmm. and to get the job done still. So that's your pleomorphism. I'm trying to get back to the measles.
No, that's okay. I'll take you back there, but no, you're doing great. So then when this germ gets feisty and puts on his hazmat suit, does he have to come out somewhere, and is that why people get symptoms of flu or colds or meat?
No. The symptoms are, if it's a detox, the symptoms are your germs actually doing a full-on detox. Like normally you wouldn't notice that they're doing this stuff, cleaning up the dead cells and stuff. But if there's a massive amount, mm-hmm. then you are going to feel it.
I see.
Yeah, maybe because they are taking on the stronger form, and there's more of them because they have a lot more to clean up.
Yes.
So then you're going to see the results of that, and you're going to feel it. You're going to get a fever because there's a lot of germs.
The body's burning up.
They need a lot more oxygen, so they ask the body to provide them with more blood and more oxygen. So you'll get your fever, and then the spots would be the toxins being pushed out through the skin.
The measles or the mumps.
Yeah, that's the toxins, and they're just getting pushed out through that particular exit.
Yeah.
Because there are various exits, obviously. And if they go through the skin, then it's very visual. You can see it happening. Whereas the normal route, if you got poisoned normally, you'd either vomit, just get it straight out again.
Mm. Or get diarrhea.
If it goes through and you end up getting the diarrhea. Mm-hmm. If you breathe it in, you'd be coughing, get it out that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got your mucus, which is a kind of, it's the germs collecting all the toxins into a form that can be ejected, I suppose.
So we create mucus to get them out.
Yeah.
Blow our nose. Is there any evidence that you've ever seen that kids who have, quote, the mumps or the measles, which you don't really have, but they call it that, pass it on to somebody else? There's not really anything to pass on, is there? If it's a detox.
No. Well, I had mumps and I had measles when I was little.
Mm-hmm.
And I had two sisters, and we slept in the same bed. We all slept in a big bed together. And I had mumps and measles, and both my sisters didn't get that.
Hmm.
I was the only one in the family that got those. But we did all have chicken pox together at the exact same time.
Mm-hmm.
Where if you do believe in contagion, there's always a waiting period. Like, you're supposed to catch it, and then it takes 7 days to brew up in your body,
mm-hmm.
and then you have your symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they explain it. But we all had it at the exact same time. We didn't pass it on to each other.
Yeah.
So something had affected us all at once. And the mumps and the measles that I had when I was, and they didn't, was probably because I was the oldest and I went to school first. So I was in school in a different environment, picking up toxins or whatever, school dinners, whatever, I don't know. Horrible school dinners we had to eat. And they were still at home and didn't have to eat that stuff.
But can it also be argued that you had it? I mean, I'm just theorizing here, that you got it because you were the strongest. You were the oldest. Your body had the ability to detoxify. I mean, that's an interesting theory as well. Possible.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, because every childhood disease, like in the alternative fields, they always say it's kind of a mild step.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Once you've had the measles, the child suddenly has a growth spurt, or it covers it, it starts speaking or something like that. There's always something new happens
after yes, ma'am.
The detox.
Yes, ma'am.
And I think the reason they say you can't get it again, which is a lie because you can, plenty of people get measles more than once. But the reason they say you can't get it again is because you've detoxed something from your body that one time, and your body, I think it learns how to deal with that toxin. Maybe that part of germ theory has got a bit of truth in it. You know, like learning to ride a bike, maybe we do learn how to deal with certain toxins.
Mm-hmm.
The next time it will be easier.
Many people look upon the measles and mumps as kind of a rite of passage, something that's just a natural and a good, strong thing to go through, and you'll be better for it, just like any detoxification process would be. And also, I think it's an interesting concept to consider that, and I'm sure you know, that so often they want to be careful that ladies who are pregnant do not get the mumps or the measles, right? Because if it is a detoxification process, it could harm the child going through that detox while they're in the womb.
Mm. Yeah, I don't actually know how that works.
Neither do I, but I'm just making it up as I go. So,
I know that when I was pregnant, I didn't get anything. I didn't get a cold. I didn't get flu. So I don't think it's a good time for your body to clean out.
Right.
Probably.
Yeah, the body's smart enough to say, no, let's not do that. Let's wait. Right.
It's very. It takes a lot of energy to do a big detox. It takes a lot of. Nutrients, you use up a lot of nutrients when you're doing it, and you're trying to grow a baby, so you need all those nutrients.
Yes, ma'am.
And you're totally focused on growing that baby, so I think that's why you don't detox when you're pregnant. Another thing that doesn't happen when you're pregnant is your hair doesn't fall out. As soon as you've had that baby, you can pull your hair out in handfuls. It just comes out. Like,
what do you suppose that is? Some kind of hormone imbalance or something?
I think it's a similar thing. I think your hairs fall out when they've... A lot of toxins go into your hair.
Yeah.
That's how they can do those readings from reading your hair, how toxic you are. So I think like the toxins get pushed into your hair, out of your body, then when... I think when it gets to a certain length and it's full of toxins, it probably just
falls out.
Takes it away.
We're talking with Tracy Northern. She is in, you're in Northern Ireland or Southern Ireland?
It's geographically it's north.
North.
Technically it's south.
Oh.
what I mean.
That'll make my head explode.
Donegal.
We're going to take
Donegal.
We're going to take a quick commercial break, so you stay right there, okay? Don't go away.
Okay.
Stay right there. My name is Patrick Timpone. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. We've known Daniel Vitalis. Known Daniel now 13, 14 years. What a cool guy. And he's got a quite interesting company. It's called Sir Thrival. And some of his main products, you'll see a little picture there, colostrum, pine pollen, elk velvet antler, shaga, reishi, vitamin D3, K2, and he's got a great CBD oil and also digestive bitters. This is something on the pine pollen you guys might want to get. And also, ladies, we've had ladies that have taken this, and I actually recommend it to my sister, who she's having some hot flashes sometimes with the gals. Have a little bit of extra testosterone can help them with hot flashes. And this is a very natural food source of testosterone with, you know, rather than going some high, low T center, you don't want to do that. Listen. Previously with Peter Ragnar, who's a great example of staying young and healthy, we asked him what kinds of things he takes.
Personally, for myself, I look at all of the supplements that help bolster and harmonize my hormones. And, you know, this is both for men and for women. And when you go online, there's so much information about that out there. I heard on one of your advertisements there, Patrick, about the pine pollen. I personally take pine pollen, which I think it's an amazing product, has an amazing effect upon the body.
Peter, it's one of our favorites, too. Pine pollen, any of these are Thrival links. You have the pine pollen pure potency, pine pollen gold, and if you'd like to get it every month, the auto ship is the best price. Also, Stephen Buhner's book, exclusively on pine pollen, is right there on the site too, Daniel's site, right here on OneRadioNetwork.com. Well, I've been doing a lot of colostrum lately. I go through my stages with colostrum, but it is a wonderful product. I like to mix it up with smoothies, with fruit, and the Grotein product from Shen Blossom. It's a wonderful protein. That's the first ingredient is bamboo pith. Can you imagine? Yeah, that's cool. Bamboo pith, bamboo pith, and that's from Shen Blossom. And then, so you can make your own little smoothies or so. Have you looked into this hydrogen machine? This is a great technology. This is from a previous show with Dr. Mark Serkis.
So 3 months ago, a study that was published in Dove Press, brain metastasis completely disappear in non-small cell lung cancer using hydrogen gas inhalation. A case study done in China, a 44-year-old woman diagnosed with multiple metastases.
What's a metastasis?
It means it spread.
It's spreading.
Not just one tumor, she has multiple tumors.
Uh-huh.
The kind of case where there's no hope, doctors give up hope, complete remission using hydrogen gas.
Really?
In terms of brain cancer, and of course in my hydrogen book, which people can download from my site, quite a bit of information about using hydrogen for cancer and the many reasons and studies that lead up to that. But this study that I'm talking about today, it's
amazing.
It's like taking a 2x4 and smashing it over the sign of modern oncology. Like, wake up, boys. Here's something simple, something you should be doing anyway, that happens to help people with the worst forms of cancer, almost doomed to die.
If these studies on breathing hydrogen gas in cancer cells are accurate, imagine the possibilities of what this technology can do for you and I when we breathe it and drink the water. Peer-reviewed studies have shown it's the best antioxidant known to man. What exactly is it doing? I have no idea. We have the AquaCure Brown's Gas Hydrogen Machine. We think the best one out there, created by George Wiseman. On our website, you can get a 10% discount, promo code ONERADIO, 1 year, no questions asked, money back guarantee, lifetime warranty, 10% discount. Click and order if you want one on OneRadioNetwork.com. You hear that? 1 year, no questions asked, money back. Boom. After 10 months, you say, man, this thing's not doing anything. It will. But this thing's not doing anything. It will. But and you email George and he'll give you your money back. So what kind of confidence does that tell you has in this technology? I've been breathing this gas for, 18 months now, 19, 20 months. I'm feeling better than I've felt my whole lifetime. And I've racked up about 74 times around the sun, and I love it. I do it a lot. You can drink the water. It's a really pretty terrific technology. I think you'll enjoy it. Check it out, OneRadioNetwork.com. We ship them all over the world. Someone from, I think, Netherlands somewhere. Anyway, they're checking about the voltage. He can do 220 as well as 250 voltage, but just let me know if you have any questions about the voltage here, and George will take good care of you. It's on OneRadioNetwork.com.
We are listener-supported. One Radio Network.
We're with Tracy Northern, and she is really interested in this whole show me the virus thing. And thanks for coming on the show. I'm enjoying the way you're explaining this. It's very helpful. That's why we invited you, because some of the people we have on are a little bit more geeky than you are. You're a little bit more down to earth. That's what I liked about the video that I heard from you before, so we can better understand. So,
that's why I made the videos.
Yes.
Because a lot of people were, I was sharing a lot of Tom Cowan's and Andy Kaufman's stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And commenting on them and things like that. And a lot of my friends were asking me why I can't just explain it simply without using all these big giant words. And then a guy called Adam Crow, I remember his name now, the Kras Files in Australia, he got in touch with me and he asked me to come on his show, like you did. He asked me to come on and talk on his show, and I was like, well, what am I going to talk about? I'm not a speaker. I don't do speeches and things like that, and I'm not really a very good talker in public, I don't think. So he said, well, just come on for a chat. It's not formal, it'll just be like random stuff. We can just have a chat and see how it goes. So I did one chat with him, and it was quite fun. So then he said, why don't you do a proper show? And I thought, maybe this is the time to do what everyone's been asking me to do, you know, try and explain it in layman's terms.
Yes.
And try and lay it all out so everyone can understand it. So I did 3 podcasts, and I started with germ theory, and I just went through the whole history of it, how it came about, why we're all so dependent on it now, and basically just bashed it.
Yeah.
You know?
Good for you.
And everybody really liked it. I was really surprised. They loved it, and they just said, do another one. Talk about this, talk about that. So then I said, well, what's the next thing that you think of when you stop believing germ theory? And it's always, well, how do you catch measles, and how do you catch what happened to smallpox and polio and all those other things? So I did the podcast on contagion, and I went through the history of all the major diseases that they always talk about, like Bill Gates and his flu, because he loves the Spanish flu. I even did the Black Death right at the beginning, just for fun. Tried to work out what was causing that, and I went through each disease and listed all the other possible causes that it could have been apart from a virus. And I also stuck in there scurvy,
yeah,
which we all know is not a contagious disease, but it actually was a contagious disease for about 300 years.
Really?
It was like
people thought that you could catch scurvy from one another.
Yes, it was like the cancer of the day. It was killing everybody, and they all thought it was contagious. And it was just lack of vitamin C. It was just people not eating fruit, for Christ's sake.
Wow.
So a lot of the other big contagious diseases were partly malnutrition as well.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays, there's a lot of malnutrition going on here now.
Sure. Well, because, as you say, Tracy, if the terrain theory is really what's going on, and we think it is, you know, a version of it, without the proper nutrition, we don't know what's going on down there, right? These little germies they're doing all kinds of things that we just don't know.
Well, there's even new research coming out that our digestive system is not what we've been told as well.
Right.
Have you?
Or even the immune system, right? Yeah. Even the immune system is not what we think it is as well, right?
Well, there isn't an immune system.
That's what I mean. There isn't no such thing.
But the digestive system one is really interesting because do you ever have Robert O. Young on your show?
I have not, but I've heard of him. Give us a short story on the what you believe is going on with the digestive system that we believe, and it's not true.
Well, it's not. According to him, it's not your body, your stomach does not make battery acid to melt the food that we eat.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's always sounded really ridiculous to me anyway, because we know that there's bacteria in our stomach. So if we made battery acid, that would eat the bacteria as well.
Mm-hmm.
So his version of digestion is the stomach is an alkalizing chamber. When you eat something that's very acidic, your stomach is where it gets alkalized. And that makes complete sense, because that means your body is making, your body makes a kind of, what's baking soda called in chemistry? I don't know. Baking soda.
It's very alkaline.
Bicarbonate.
Right.
It makes, your body makes bicarbonate. And that's what alkalizes the mess that you've put in your stomach to make it safe for your body. And the acid, if you get acid reflux, that is because whatever you've put in your body is so acidic. It's that that's making the acid. It's not your body. You see what I mean?
Sure. But that's why orange juice, which is an acid, it turns to alkaline, right? Down there. No?
It's an acid in a different way, though.
It's a different...
Lemon juice, even though it's an acid, is alkalizing. But I think because my theory on vitamin C is it's a chemistry thing, and it somehow breaks down toxins. That's why it's so important to the body, and we need vitamins. Like, most animals make their own vitamin C, but we don't.
But we do not, right.
Probably because we're frugarians by nature, we would normally be eating fruit all day long anyway, so we don't need to make our own vitamin C. And the vitamin C is a kind of acid which is used by the body chemically to neutralize toxins. So in that way, it's alkalizing. It's an acid that we need.
So you, it feels to you, and also to me, that we are naturally more frugivores, eating any kind of plant that has a flower, which would be squash, whatever, fruit, okra. I mean,
cucumbers, avocados,
fruits, a botanical fruit, yeah. Right? Yeah. Most people do really well in all those things, don't they?
Yeah, I was brought up, I don't even remember eating fruit when I was a child. Very sad. The only fruit I remember getting was the tins of fruit salad, you know, those horrible tins of fruit salad with loads of sugar in them.
I don't know.
We had tinned pears now and again for pudding. But that was about the limit of my fruit when I was a kid.
We're talking with Tracy Northern in Ireland. If you have a question, patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Here's one for you. This is from Angela. I'm enjoying your guest, but how do you explain when people in the same household seem to get the flu at the same time if they're not catching a flu virus?
Well, she said it herself, they get it at the same time. So how can they have caught it from each other? There's a lapsed period in the germ theory where if you catch it off your spouse, you won't have any symptoms for 7 days. If you're getting symptoms at the same time, that's not contagion. And they're both in the same environment. They're both eating the same diet, same food. They're living in the same air. Pollution, whatever, whatever causes, you know, your body to become toxic.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing with flu is because it is a big detox, it's quite a big one, your body needs rest when it does this.
Mm-hmm.
When it goes into a flu detox, you have to really lie down, go to bed, not eat, drink lots of water. So when I always used to get flu when I was younger at Christmas, but I would always get it on Boxing Day.
Up to
Christmas, all the stress, getting the kids' presents, working like a dog, just stress. And then Boxing Day, it's all over. I can just relax, bang, get the flu. Every year I did it. Haven't had it for quite a long time now, though. But that would happen to me every year.
I think, too, this emailer, it's also fair to say that when people live in the same household, right, they're exchanging telepathically all kinds of information spiritually, right? I mean, just like women who menstruate together after when they live together, you know, and sometimes we'll get sick with somebody just to be compassionate. We'll say, oh, I think I'll detox too, you know, subconsciously. I mean, all kinds of things could be going on, right? Just to support the other person. Well, if you're going to detox, I'll do it too, whatever. You know, we don't know a lot of stuff. We're just, right? We're just throwing mud up against the wall generally when we've been believing that we catch the flu from some virus floating around. Can you explain what Cowan and Kaufman and others in Lanka talk about, how, I never really got this, how we don't even, it's not even really possible that we breathe in something and get sick? I mean, it doesn't even work like that? This contagion idea, right?
Yeah. Well, you can, if you breathe in poisons, you're going to get sick.
Sure. Yeah.
So, yeah, you can breathe in poisons and get sick.
Sure, of course. But I mean, but something from me, I mean, if I'm around you and I'm breathing out something, you're not going to get something from me, are you?
No. Not from a virus or a germ, definitely not, no.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say no, definitely not. But then you're saying this energy exchange thing.
That's easy.
That could be contagion, couldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah. I mean, we do exchange energy all the time, right? And,
So then we have to look at what is disease.
Exactly.
It's the wrong name for it. It's just a detox.
Yes.
Most care.
Feels like it.
With diseases, they are just detoxes. I mean, there are things that aren't detoxes. The chronic diseases are not detoxes. They're a lack of detox, I would say.
Yeah, well said. Well said, right? Yes. Things will build up in the body, and then the body can't even, like, cancer, heart disease, everything, right?
The body can't deal with it because the bacteria have been killed normally.
Have been killed.
The antibiotics.
Okay.
Don't forget the antibiotics that they like to give out left, right, and center.
Right.
Those are... They don't kill all your bacteria, but they do a lot of damage. So the bacteria will tend to go into a different form and lay dormant or like ride it out until they can come back and regroup and start detoxing again. But then you just get more antibiotics loaded on you again.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a cycle. It just keeps repeating.
Yes, ma'am. Here's an email for you. This is interesting. A friend got red spots all over her upper arms and upper legs 1 month after getting the injection. She has changed nothing in the way of food or activities. Could this be an autoimmune reaction to the shots And can't she do anything to help the spots? Steroids help, but she wants to do it naturally.
I'm not a doctor.
Right. Thing.
She shouldn't have had the shot. She's been poisoned.
Yeah, I know.
Why did she have the shot?
I know.
She's been poisoned. There's poison in her blood system. The red spots are the body trying to push those poisons out.
Yes, ma'am. I think you're right. I think you're accurate.
From what I've heard of these particular shots, there's no way of detoxing that crap.
Really?
Because we're talking nanobots. And what else is in there? That
God knows what.
Oh, SM-102, there's the Magneto stuff. There's so many things they're not telling us that could be in any of the shots.
Yes, ma'am.
That are not even biological. They're all they're high-tech stuff. It's not biological material. So how can you detox that? Nobody knows. We just don't know. Nobody knows what's going to happen when you have that shot.
Yes.
It's a massive experiment. And to go and get the shot and then worry about the side effects is just madness.
I understand.
I just don't know what to say to people like that.
In general, in Ireland, what's the overall reaction and of the injections, would you say? Just can you give us a sense of what people are thinking? Or
in Ireland, it's pretty much the same as everywhere else. There's
about the same
half and half split, mm-hmm. half and half split between people going, I don't want it, and people that are rushing to get it.
Mm-hmm.
But luckily, here they've been very slow giving it out.
Huh.
It's not going very well here for them.
Hmm.
They're not getting it out. I think because of Brexit and stuff, it's hard getting stuff over here now. So they're having a bit of a logistic problem getting the vaccines around to people.
Good
so
for you.
I haven't even heard. I haven't even heard offers of a vaccine yet.
Yeah.
But I don't. I haven't registered for a doctor either. So.
Sure.
Get in touch with me.
Here's a good one. This is from Gina. We've heard a lot about this idea of shedding. I'm beginning to understand a little bit. Can your guest give her opinion on what could or could not be going on with shedding of this injection? Have you looked into that?
Yeah. We've all been looking into it.
Have you?
It's driving us bonkers. Yeah, because no one knows really. The best explanation that I've heard was from Amanda Vollmer. She's a naturopath in Canada.
Yes, we've had her on the show. She's good, yeah.
Very good. And she thinks it's something to do with our pheromones. When our hormones are raging, we give off pheromone signals.
Yes, ma'am.
And that's how women sync their periods. Same thing. And what these jabs are doing is affecting women's cycles, definitely. Mm. We know that for a fact.
Yes.
And they are supposed to be sterilizing people. So, and I only heard yesterday that one of the active ingredients in one of the jabs is being found collected in the ovaries of women. So it is going directly to their ovaries.
Wow. My God.
Yeah, so once somebody's got happening in their body, what pheromones are they giving off?
Mm-hmm.
You know, are they giving signals to other women to shed the inside of their wombs suddenly? I don't know. But that is the only explanation that I can think of that's happening, because if you're being injected with really bad toxins, even if they are coming out of your body, they're going to be depleted by your body you know, yes, trying to fight them off. So by the time they're coming out of your body, they're not going to be strong enough to poison the next person, hopefully. So I think the pheromone thing is the most likely explanation for me.
And if shedding was really an issue with these live vaccines, which I think measles and mumps are live vaccines, right? They actually have a little bit of this thing. We'd all be dead, right? I mean, because every kid on the planet's been, I mean, not dead, but it all would be a problem, of course, wouldn't it?
I don't know what's in the vaccines that they call live vaccines, because they haven't got a virus. So what
exactly? Yeah, good point. What's in there?
Live. I know that they are more toxic, but if you go back to the Ender's paper and how they isolate the virus and grow it, they grow it in this soup of antibiotics and starving cells and monkey kidney cells and all kinds of other crap. And that is the stuff that they use for a live vaccine. That is the very stuff.
Oh, that's what they're putting in there.
That's it, yeah. Yeah. So pretty toxic stuff.
So your point is, I never really thought it through, but if there is no virus, which there isn't, what do they start with? What do they start with?
That is what got me thinking when I heard about the measles, the Stefan Lanka measles case. Mm-hmm. I was like, hang on a minute. We've had the measles vaccine since the 1950s.
Sure.
And now he said there is no virus. They haven't isolated one. What the hell have they been putting in those vaccines and telling us it's a virus?
Exactly.
Crazy. So we know that vaccines are bullshit now, basically.
Here's an email for Tracy Northern from Frank. So I'm really confused. What did all those gay people die of if there's no HIV virus? Millions of people died, he says.
I did do a section on my podcast on AIDS.
Did you?
And yes, it explains, like, first of all, the first people that they thought they'd discovered AIDS in were sick blokes in Los Angeles and San Francisco in the gay community that were having a very hard partying lifestyle, taking lots of drugs. They were constantly going to the doctors with supposed STDs and being put on antibiotics constantly. They were just always on antibiotics. So they were eventually getting liver problems. Their livers just couldn't cope anymore. So then they call that hepatitis. Your liver's starting to give in. They call it hepatitis, which is supposedly caused by another virus. So then they decided to try out a hepatitis B vaccine on that community.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's try out this new vaccine and see if we can sort this hepatitis problem out. And that killed a lot of people. And as it always goes with all these plagues that happen, they cover up the vaccine damage with a new plague. So they called it what these men died of after they'd been injected with Hep B. They called it AIDS. And then they had to find the culprit, which was the HIV, which they never found. So, and then they decided, because can't remember if they weren't managing to get this vaccine offloaded enough on the Americans, so they decided to go and take it over to Africa and test it on the Africans. Hence the African AIDS started. But it was all because of a vaccine originally. And then after that, then they just started using the PCR test to pretend that people had HIV, which they've never isolated, never proved to exist. But once you've got this positive test, just like they're doing with COVID, they'd give them AZT, which was one of the most toxic drugs they've ever made.
My goodness.
Which they rejected for cancer because it killed everybody they gave it to. So they decided to give it to the gay men. And every person that took AZT after they'd had this PCR test saying they were HIV positive, all got what they call AIDS.
My goodness. What a story.
The whole body just shuts down.
Yeah, the whole thing. So, so this PCR test was used in the late 70s and early 80s to say if you had AIDS. And these young boys, mostly men, were taking this PCR test, showing positive, which we know is Casey Mullins has said himself, and Carrie Mullins, it doesn't mean anything. And can you imagine the fear and the dread that was instilled in these young men too? No one, and then what would that do to their body? Just alone, you could probably kill somebody, right? If you thought you were going to die too, right? I mean,
yeah. Well, I ended up in hospital in the 80s. Can't remember what year it was, 88 or 89.
Mm-hmm.
I had an ectopic pregnancy, which means you the tube burst, which meant I was hemorrhaging inside.
Wow.
I was bleeding from the inside. And my lungs were actually filling up with blood. I felt like I was drowning. It was horrible. But anyway, they operated, took out the poor little fetus that was killing me. And I was severely, what do you call it when you've got no blood? Anemic. Severely anemic, and they wanted to give me a blood transfusion, but they had to ask me because of the whole thing, because it had just come out on the news at the time that they needed to test all the blood in case there was HIV in the blood. And at the time, I was still, well into germ theory and all that. So I was like, well, there's no way you're putting that blood in me. So I had to go that was it. Instead of that, they said I'd have to drink this horrible orange liquid. The bottle like this big, full of orange, bright orange stuff that stank. It was horrible. And I was like, well, I can't drink that either. I'm just going to throw up. So I looked up what had iron in it, what foods had iron in it that I could eat.
Mm-hmm.
And the highest ones were dried apricots, dark chocolates, which, yum, I can eat that, and Brazil nuts. Huh. So I just got a bag full of all these things, and I ate them every day for a week and went back to have my blood test, and I was fine. I didn't need a blood transfusion at all.
I'll be.
So,
dried apricots, dark chocolate, and what else?
Brazil nuts.
Just for iron.
Yeah. And well, I picked out all the things that I actually could eat and like, And those had very high iron, so.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked. My blood was, he said it was amazing. It was better than if I'd, because I took him the bottle back. I said, you can keep your bottle. I don't want it. And he said, well, your blood's better than if you had taken the iron. So,
my goodness. This is interesting from David. What is your guest take on Fauci's connection with the HIV? Was he in on this whole deal?
Yes, I've been
Fauci,
munching
man.
That.
Jeez.
And our little friend Judy Mikovits, she was in on the whole HIV scam.
She was in on it.
Yeah, I have seen a lot of crossovers with AIDS and COVID. There's a lot of things keep cropping up that are the same as the whole AIDS scam.
Like what?
Oh, yes.
Like what? Just the PCR test? That's one, right?
The PCR test is one. The no isolation of the virus. The there was something the other day that I saw, and I can't even remember it now. There's something came out that that COVID is supposedly similar to HIV. But it's gone. I told you, I can't keep things in my brain that long.
Yeah.
But there is a definite connection between Fauci and HIV and COVID, yeah.
Yeah, he's a rascal for sure. He's a scallywag for sure. what do you make of this ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine thing, and people feel better from these symptoms? What do you think's going on here?
Well, for a start, there is no COVID.
Right, we know that. That's what I mean. So I'm kind of,
What are they taking these drugs for? Is it a placebo thing?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those drugs kill parasites.
Yes.
They're a parasite-killing drug.
Yes,
so
ma'am.
They're a form of poisons. So you are poisoning your body. Your body probably goes into shock, which it does when you get poisoned. And you tend to feel good when your body's in shock because you have, increased, you're in fight or flight mode, kind of.
Ah.
And when you have more energy because you're geared up to run away, to fight something,
mm-hmm.
Your body goes into high stress. And you don't get symptoms of anything when you're in high stress because you need to focus on surviving.
Interesting.
So, maybe that's why they think they feel better.
Could be.
Because I can't think of anything where you would stick some poison in you to kill some parasites, helping to get rid of a non-existent virus. It's ridiculous.
Well, what about, there are people that are conjecturing is the word, that many people do have an overgrowth of parasites, and I guess that's fair. They're out of balance. Maybe the ivermectin is killing the excess buggies and they feel better because of that, too. I guess that's possible, too. Huh? I don't know.
Well, they've said this about cancer for years, that cancer is a form of, our bodies are full of parasites. They do a parasite cleanse. A parasite cleanse doesn't involve poisoning yourself. You eat a specific diet to do a parasite cleanse. You eat food that the parasites don't like. Like, parasites like sugar, and they like
carbs.
What do you call it? Food that's processed. They like processed stuff. Stuff that's bad for you is what parasites eat.
Oh, I see.
So they're kind of like big giant germs, really. They're eating all the stuff that would hurt us. So,
well, good for them, really, right?
Yeah, exactly. They used to actually give themselves parasites in the olden days. Women would, to make them lose weight.
No kidding.
They wanted to lose weight. They'd actually eat some parasites.
Okay.
Yeah. An old diet thing.
It's always tricky, isn't it, Tracy? In my opinion, when we go start to try to kill something with hydrogen peroxide or colloidal silver or even turpentine, which is pretty interesting, we've done shows on. It gets tricky because, you know, if the body's always trying to make balance, how do you know who's killing what, you know?
Exactly, but is hydrogen peroxide actually killing anything?
I don't know.
I see a lot of things lately where they say they're coming out with alternative remedies, and they're calling them antibacterials. Like they'll come up with some fruit or something and say, "Eat this fruit; it's antibacterial." It's utter nonsense. Then a fruit does not kill bacteria, and you wouldn't want to anywhere. I don't get the mentality of it. This is why we have to get rid of the germ theory.
Because yes, ma'am. It's just stupid, isn't it? It's really, yeah. Last time Kaufman was on our show, he really told a great story about these strep bacteria that are really cleaning up the mess in your throat, right? And if you get a antibiotic, well, then you're just stopping the process. You might feel better for a minute, but then something's going to come back out, right?
It's got to come out somewhere, yeah. Well, I was just looking at the other day, I was doing some research and I was looking at like graphs of the human microbiome.
Yeah.
And I found a really good one. And it had little arrows going to every different part of your body. And it had the names of the different germs that live in those areas. Because each organ has its own microbiome. And yeah, in your throat and your nose, you have strep and you have the one that they say causes diphtheria. I can't remember what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
But those two are always living in your nose and your throat. And yet they call a sore throat strep throat.
But they're always there.
Well, they're always there, yes. And if they're not there, you're in trouble, basically. You are going to get sick if you don't have any strep in you.
Yeah.
But they knew this for so long. They've known it for so long when they did some experiments on diphtheria, which was ages of like early 1900s probably. Or late 1800s, they did an experiment on diphtheria in children, and they found that the diphtheria bug was in the healthy kids and the sick kids.
And the sick kids.
Yeah, they found it with all the bugs. That's why the germ theory was dead on its feet from the very start. But they just covered it up. They covered all this stuff up.
Covered it up. What do you make of the whole smallpox thing? There's a very historic story of Andrew Jackson and the American Indians, and they gave them theoretically blankets, right, that are infected with smallpox, and it was called the Trail of Tears, and thousands of Indians died. Do you have any insights? Have you done any research on that?
I did a piece on my WordPress. I can't remember which one it was. I think it was one about how no one ever died from contagious diseases. And I had a little bit at the end that I found later on about the American Indians and the blankets. And Jim West actually commented on my WordPress and left me his description of what he thought was happening. And I wish I could look at it now because I can't remember exactly what he said. But he said that the soldiers always carried around with them some kind, it was a kind of strychnine medicine based on strychnine.
Mm-hmm.
And they were giving that to the Indians as a medicine. Because I thought it was, they used to give a lot of medicines that had mercury in them at the time.
Uh-huh.
That was big then. But he said, no, it was strychnine. And the symptoms of strychnine poisoning are exactly the same as smallpox.
Oh.
So they were just poisoned.
So much like the AIDS thing, he was saying that they were just poisoned.
They were poisoning them, but they were also vaccinating them.
Oh, they were?
They were vaccinating all the Indians back in the day, yeah.
Hmm.
They were.
How far back,
testing them out.
Tracy Northern, does the whole germ theory go? Do we know? When did it first start?
Yeah, it was late 1800s.
After the Civil War?
1870. Around 1870, around that time, that was when Bichamp and Pasteur were having their little to's and fro's.
Ah.
Of what was causing disease.
I see.
Yeah. Then it really took off because I believe the Rothschilds got behind Pasteur and funded his research, funded his findings, gave him a platform, and they really wanted this germ theory to be big.
I bet they did. Yeah,
they could see the money, chance of making lots of money.
The money tree. I hadn't heard the Rothschild connection, but that makes sense, right? If they really supported Pasteur.
I haven't found any proof, but okay. If you read the history of the Rothschilds and what was going on in France at the time, it's so obvious. Hmm. It's got to be that had to have happened, that he would have met the Rothschilds and they would have, you know, lots of money. Because they were funding both sides of the war at the time and stuff like that, weren't they?
Sure, in the Civil War, that's right. The story is that one of the Rothschild's son had the north and one had the south. You know? So that's the story. I don't know. Oh, my goodness. I lost my... I had a good question there and I lost it. Pasteur. He was in France?
Yeah, he was in France, but he also went to Germany for a time.
Uh-huh.
I was reading his famous memoirs that he'd banned his offspring and the next offspring from ever making his memoirs public, his private journals.
Mm-hmm.
But then they passed to the next child and he obviously decided to make them public, which wasn't very long ago, but once they went public, it all came out how much conniving he did and lying and cheating on his experiments.
He really cooked the books on those, didn't he?
Oh, God, yes, he did. He cheated with the sheep and the anthrax and just to make a show, make it good for the audience.
Mm-hmm.
The right sheep dropped dead at the right time.
And to this day, they pasteurize everything they can get their hands on, don't they, Tracy Northern?
Yes, they do.
Milk.
Yeah, I was making apple juice where I did my plant science course, and we wanted to have some unpasteurized apple juice.
Yeah.
We had to steal it while they weren't looking because they're not allowed to give it out unpasteurized. It's nuts.
I know. Do you know, I think there's only two or three states in this country where you can sell unpasteurized milk at the store. I know California is one. I think there's a couple other. Otherwise, you can't even sell it.
No, I don't drink milk anywhere. So. No. I'm not a fan of milk. I'm a vegan, so.
Oh, you're a vegan.
Yeah. I don't like to call myself that anymore because I think we've been given a bad rap lately. There's a lot of people been jumping on the vegan bandwagon and giving us a bad reputation.
Sure, sure.
I don't normally advertise that I'm a vegan, but I'm plant-based, put it that way.
Yeah, plant-based.
Animal rights, plant-based.
Well, that's good. I like that. Well, you're very interesting to talk about. I'm so pleased that you came on the show. I was first attracted to your work because of your passion for the animal rights and what they do. And I can't even think about it, and I start crying, what they do to animals, yeah. Monkeys and stuff. I mean, I can't even take it, you know. I can't even watch the videos of what they do to chickens and you know, all this, the way they do, and cows, and separating from the mothers, and man, I can't deal with it. You know, I go to pieces, you know, can't deal with it. I start crying.
This is exactly why I got into what I'm into now.
Yeah.
That was what started me.
That's what started
my journey.
You. Yeah.
Yeah. If I'd just carried on going to McDonald's and eating crap, I probably wouldn't have ended up where I am now. Probably be going down to Twickenham to get my free jab.
Get your free jab, baby. Is the whole animal testing thing getting better? Less? No, or is that changing much? Same stuff?
It's getting worse, if anything.
No kidding.
And now they're... Well, I just heard just today, this morning, that they're exposing Fauci for doing experiments where they took 5-month-old aborted fetuses, scalped them.
Oh, no.
Then sewed the scalps to some rats' backs. I mean, what the fuck's that all about?
Did you just say the F-bomb? Did you just drop an F-bomb on my show? That's okay. Don't worry about it. Wow. I hadn't heard that one. I don't think I'm going to read that story. Oh, my goodness. Maybe, you sure that's not fake news? I mean, come on.
No, because the thing that people don't understand, when they do these experiments on fetuses, people think that they are dead. They can't use any cells and tissues from dead bodies. They have to be alive. Just like if you have a transplant, those transplanted organs have taken out while you're still alive, or they're no good. Once you're dead, they can't use anything because it becomes toxic. So these aborted fetuses are alive when they're cut up.
I had no idea.
When they take tissues and organs out, those babies are alive, and they're not anesthetized either. So this is Vivisection Mark II. This is called vivisection, even though it's not animals. This is still vivisection.
And there are, it's true, there are, and there have been for a long time, parts of these aborted fetuses in all kinds of vaccines, correct?
Yeah. They've been using aborted fetuses for a long time in them, yeah. Just not telling us. But they've been using aborted fetus cows since smallpox, really. That's when it all started with the vaccines, because vacca means cow. So,
what means
vaccination
cow? What means cow?
Vacca, it's Latin for cow.
Vacca,
Yeah, so vaccination means you're injecting bits of cow juice into your body to cure you of smallpox.
Oh, good.
That's how it all came about, the word vaccination. I think he actually invented vaccination because inoculation was actually banned in 1840.
It was?
They actually banned it. Yes. I really want to find out, if you've got any lawyers in your audience, I'd really like to find out if that law still stands. Because what they're doing now is inoculation. They just call it vaccination. It's inoculation with a different label on it.
And
I always wonder why they don't like to use the word inoculation.
Well, it's interesting.
And that's why.
We had Thomas Renz on yesterday. He's been on 2 or 3 times. Mm-hmm. He's got 3 or 4 lawsuits. He's an attorney, all about the vaccine passports and the masking. Very smart guy. Is there actually a law that you could find, you could send me? Maybe I could forward to Renz. There's a law in the books?
That's what I'm asking.
Oh.
I don't know, because I'm not a lawyer. I need someone to look up and see if this law still exists, this ban. Because if it was banned in 1840 and it hasn't been repealed, they're all breaking the law. They've been breaking the law for donkey's years, 100 years or more.
Send me whatever information you have on this law, and I'll send it to Renz and see if maybe he could find something.
That's all I have.
Oh, that's all you have.
All I have is what... I read it in, what's her name? Dawn Lester and David Parker's book.
Yes.
What Really Makes Us Ill.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in there. And as soon as I read it, I was like, what?
Whoa. So.
If it was banned in 1840, that's big.
1840, okay. Dawn and David, and we've had them on the show. They're great. In 1840, they say there was some law that was made through Congress in the United States?
No, in it would have been in UK.
Oh, in the UK. Huh.
Yeah, because Edward Jenner then came along, and then he invented the vaccination, didn't he? And this was just before they did the ban, he invented the vaccination. so that when they banned inoculation, he could say, well, this isn't inoculation, this is vaccination.
Jenner.
Yeah, Edward Jenner.
Jenner. Well, as you know, just looking at the Nuremberg Code, and this is a medical experiment, and it's just totally unlawful what they're doing, as you know. It's just
totally unlawful.
I don't know how they're getting away with it.
I don't know. They're not even allowed. Well, the way they're getting away with it is to make us volunteer to have it. Have to make us volunteer, we have to be willing.
Mm-hmm.
So then we've got the coercion and the free donuts, the free beer, the you can't go to a concert if you don't have this.
Right.
You can't get on an aeroplane. You can't even go shopping. That'll be the next one. Mm. You can't go into the shops to buy some bread. But that's totally unlawful too.
Yeah.
Because we have the right to travel. And we have the right to go and buy food and barter and stuff and do business. So that's unlawful anyway. But they're getting away with it because no one's... There are people fighting it. There is a guy in England called something Bernician.
Bernician?
Yes, somebody Bernician. And he's done a common law kind of lawsuit to arrest all the main players, all the main MPs in Britain. But he's doing it through the common law, not like the German guy, German-American guy. He's doing it the legal. He's doing it the legal way, which he can't possibly win, I don't think. I don't think he's got a leg to stand on because that's like going into their arena, playing by their rules. Whereas Bernician's going down the common law route.
Sure. Well, I think there's going to be a lot of things showing up in the courts in this country someday, probably the Supreme Court someday, about the airlines and the shopping and all that. And I don't think it'll pass muster, in my opinion, because most the courts are pretty conservative now because Trump put in a lot of conservatives. So we'll see. But they're all compromised to God love, who knows, They're all swampy. Not all, but I think some of them are swampy, and that's a problem.
All these fines that they're giving out for people not wearing masks or things like that, none of them have actually stood up in court. No one's actually had to pay anything yet because they just get thrown out of court. So I think it's just a psyop.
Yeah,
just to
scare people.
It's just the whip.
Yeah, control.
It's the whip. Yeah. I don't think these fines are working.
This Dr. Reiner Fumich, he's cool, right? I mean, he's on it. He's doing some good things out there in Europe.
That's the legal guy, though. He's going down the legal route.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, so I don't think it will work, personally.
Yeah, the courts are all swampy, most of them. Exactly. Well, Miss Northern Tracy, your blog thing, we'll put that so our listeners can go see it. It's called Northern Tracy. Wow, that's a long title. 213-875-5599. Okay, we'll put the link, though. We'll put Northern Tracy Scribblings.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, when I made that, it was just Facebook was deleting all my notes.
I see.
So I just put them there for safekeeping. And I gave it a silly name because I was only going to use it for myself.
Mm-hmm.
But then I started writing more stuff and putting it out. So it's stuck with that name now.
because we got confused for a minute. Northern Tracy. Northern Tracy.
Yeah, Northern Tracy is my proper name.
Your pen name.
My proper pen name. Yeah.
I don't know why my voice is coming back now, but we're done with the interview, so it's fixed now. You're a pleasure to talk to. It was great fun.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
I'm sorry.
Thank you for having me.
It was really our pleasure. Thank you for coming on the show, really. Good job. Good job. You take care of yourself now and stay out of trouble, girl, okay?
<You too.
laughs> Yeah, I know. It's tough asking. We'll see you soon, Tracy. Bye-bye.
Bye.
She's great. Boy, great find, huh? Don't you love people like that to just read all this stuff and remember it and can put it out there? Good job. All right. Okay, kids, we will see you soon. We're going to take tomorrow off, Thursday, and then be back on the 4th of June. And I'm sure we'll see if we can stay out of trouble and stay under the radar. And we have a lot of our videos up on BitChute, and we're also downloading them to One Radio Network. So you can go on One Radio Network and look at some of the videos, and or go up to BitChute if you'd like to see more videos, and we do what we can. I really appreciate your support of what we do here, and you do that by looking at our website and saying, man, I'd like to try some of that. I'd like to try some colostrum or a hydrogen machine or something. That's how we support ourselves. So if you need that, I mean, don't buy something just to support us. You know, if you really want to support us and you don't need anything, just send us $20 or something. That'll be good. But we're doing fine. Thanks for your support, regardless of how you do it. People send us $10 or $20 a month. We have a little group that does that, and that really helps too. It all helps. Thank you. I love you all. Thanks a lot. Love you. We'll see you Friday morning at 10 o'clock on OneRadioNetwork.com. May the blessings be.
We are listener-supported, One Radio Network.